The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by Eno, the Capital One assistant. What's in your wallet?
This is the Will Cain podcast on ESPN Radio.
I feel like determining whether or not we're going to have college football in 2020 is like reading a legal document. You got to read between the lines. You got to find the loopholes in the words they choose to use. You got to find reality through the legalese. We're going to have college football, no matter what the University of Michigan president says. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. We need you to help break the tie. Worst spy movie came down to a tie between MacGruber and Austin Powers. And then we turn it over to the listeners. A little bit later in the Will Cain Show, we'll vote on who nominated the best spy movie on our weekend homework, but it's going to be up to you to help us decide who nominated the worst. Was it Pat with Austin Powers, or was it Bubba with MacGruber? 888-729-3776. The president of the University of Michigan, who I believe is an immunologist by training, has said there will not be college football at the University of Michigan if there are not students on campus. We've heard this at various times from various college football luminaries. Bob Bowlesby, president of the Big 12, commissioner of the Big 12. We've heard this now from people across the sports landscape, like Marty Smith, who's one of the hosts of Marty and McGee and Marty Smith's America podcast, who was on Golic and Wingo echoing what the University of Michigan president said.
From my estimation, and this is me, this is my opinion, I don't see how you play ball without students on campus. I don't get it, right? I don't know how you ask student athletes to come back and perform in front of millions of people on television when an administrator at a university says, well, y'all can play, but we can't have the rest of the student body here. That doesn't make any sense to me.
And so the legalese, the loopholes, reading between the lines is, how will universities have students on campus? Make no mistake about it. The incentive, the reality of the economics for college, much less college sports, necessitates college football being played. So how will they organize it so that students are on campus? A few weeks ago, when the Cal State system announced they were moving to virtual classes for the fall semester, which meant that San Jose State and San Diego State, among other schools in the Cal State system, would be dealing with a situation like Marty is explaining. No students on campus. But it wasn't long after that we started hearing, but there could be some students in some programs who are on campus to continue learning. Would that be enough to justify then putting athletes on the field and having a college football season? What about this? The latest reports are that numerous schools across the country are going to back up their school year, start it early in August, and dismiss by the end of November, by Thanksgiving break, conducting finals virtually in December without asking students to come back to campus. This is something that the University of South Carolina has already notified students they would be moving toward, the University of Texas as well, Notre Dame, North Carolina, and North Carolina State all plan to begin their fall semester early in August and dismiss right around Thanksgiving. This is under the guise of getting students off campus before a second wave of the coronavirus can hit. I'm not so sure about that. I've done some reading about this much talked about second wave of the coronavirus, and nothing I've read suggests, oh, December is the month to be fearful of. So we need to get students off campus before December. In fact, just before the show, I was reading when this second wave is projected to hit. And by most estimations, it said October or November, although no predictions have come true or should be held to some kind of scientific standard right now. We're all over the place. We don't know much about coronavirus, so none of that should be taken to the bank. But it does make me wonder about motivations. It does make me wonder if the goal is really to avoid a second wave of the coronavirus. Some university presidents have said it's to make sure students don't go all across the country back home for Thanksgiving and then come back to campus in December, bringing with them the potential for coronavirus. But that would apply now as well. What I'm getting at is I'm not really buying this second wave reason for getting students onto campus in August and off by the end of November. It does, however, seem to align with a college football schedule. Look, I'm not telling you what's right or wrong because I understand exactly how important college football is economically to the entire university system. But I am into calling balls and strikes. And what this illustrates to me, this rearranging of the calendar year, is just exactly how important college football is to the economics of the entire educational system. Ryan McGee, also of Marty and McGee, he was on Golic and Wingo saying, this will come down to men like the president of the University of Michigan.
All due respect to our friends who are the most powerful college football coaches in the history of the game. All due respect to our friends who are the commissioners and who are the athletic directors and, you know, the trainer and the nutritionist and everybody who has said what they think might happen with college football. It comes down to the university presidents. And all that money that you're talking about and that $4 billion, that is a drop in the bucket compared to the concern of the university president that has 50,000 undergrads. And they all write tuition checks. That's what those presidents are worried about. And it, at the end of the day, if the president of the university says, everybody's taking online classes, do not move into your dorm in August, then that's what's going to happen. And that includes the 100 guys on the football team. That's just how it's going to be.
I don't think it is a drop in the bucket. I think it's going to be the driving force in a lot of decision making. I think we're going to have college football. I think because it's needed. It's necessary economically to those universities. University of Michigan, for what it's worth, says they have enough reserves to withstand a lost football season. But not many do. And my suspicion is what they're going to be looking for is loopholes, legalese, rearranging of the calendar to allow for students on campus, to allow for college football. To be allowing for some students to come on campus so as you could have an excuse to say, oh, we need to have college football. What I'm telling you is I think the reality is their reality will require it, and they'll find ways to make it happen. What's the worst spy movie? Let's go to Logan in Nebraska. Logan, I assume it's got you're voting for one or the other, MacGruber or Austin Powers. What do you say? Break the tie for us, man.
Oh, MacGruber's definitely the worst one.
He voted. What do you want? Okay, who is this? Mike A? Or is this Nuno on the screen? Am I taking one? Did MacGruber just win? Because you got another guy on here now.
So you kind of jumped the gun there. What I was going to tell you is one voted for MacGruber and one voted for Austin Powers. So you could pick which one you wanted, and that would be the deciding
vote.
Yeah,
great job, Will.
But you just went in order.
Because I picked the guy that voted for your movie,
Bubba.
You
just went in order.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's great.
That's never how we've done
Logan, when's the last time you saw Austin Powers?
Well, it depends which one. Is it the original, the second?
The second one.
Maybe 2 weeks ago with Will Ferrell when he falls down the hill?
That's the example you use?
He's clearly seen it.
When he falls into the pit?
You saw it. Great. See you later, Logan.
I need to call out Pat on something.
Bubba, he had the credentials. He saw it in the last 2 weeks, and he referenced a pretty specific scene.
I'm surprised because, again, like Mike and I agree. It was funny when we saw it in the 90s. I didn't laugh once when I watched this weekend.
And I need to
call
Pat
out. This is what I told you after the commercial break.
Pat didn't watch it.
I do not
like
Austin Powers.
Yeah, Pat didn't even watch it. This is ridiculous.
I do not like the character Austin Powers, but the character of Dr. Evil saved that movie. He's legit funny.
He saved the first one. They did it. They went to the well too much in the second one.
Well, I hadn't seen the first one in a long time, so I didn't have to see him back to back. What are you mad at Pat about? Because he didn't watch his own movie this weekend?
He didn't watch the movie.
Yeah, but he said he'd seen it recently.
Did he? Or he said he'd seen it?
I've seen it about 100 times.
But when was the last time?
I don't know, like a couple weeks ago, probably.
Yeah. Wait, you and Logan watching movies
together?
I call Bull.
Hey, Bubba.
Yes. Yes.
MacGruber's terrible.
It's so bad.
False.
It's terrible, Bubba. It's terrible.
Worse than Joe Dirt.
You deserve the loss on that one.
It's not worse than Joe Dirt. That's ridiculous.
It is.
That's ridiculous.
I think it might have been. Now, here's the thing. Now that Bubba's lost, we all have to buckle up for some psychological thrillers next weekend.
No, Bubba doesn't pick whoever finishes
first.
Oh, yeah. Will, you're wrong.
We've only been doing this 8 weeks.
always forget the rules. All right. What are the rules on the NBA coming back? What exactly is a realistic idea? They're all brainstorming. We've got Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN NBA Insider, next to tell us what they are considering. It's coming up on The Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social Security? Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? 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 Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag. Done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Seems to be growing certainty that the NBA will resume playing. There's a lot of questions between where we stand today and that certainty becoming a reality. It's Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. I was reading our ESPN Senior NBA Insider, Adrian Wojnarowski's column up today on ESPN.com. And there's so many different invested parties with divergent incentive and desires that I don't know, no matter how creative we get, how we bring everybody onto the same page. Do bad teams want to finish out the seasons? Do players on non-competing teams think it's worth the risk to get on the field? Do good teams think they should play against lotto-bound teams? How do you get everybody to agree to a proposal? Adrian Wojnarowski's on our phone lines now. What's up, Woj?
Well, how you doing, man? Thanks for having
good.
Me.
Good. So, I was just reading your column this morning, man, and I hear the optimism. Everybody's saying, we're going to get basketball back, and that's great. But when I saw the questions and the parties laid out in your column, I'm like, that's a horrendous negotiation to try to bring everybody back together.
You know, listen, in theory it should be. The difference, I think, Will, compared to what you're seeing in baseball versus the NBA, and even I think the relationship in football between the Players Association and the league and owners and the commissioner, is while there are a lot of divergent agendas and preferences to this, I think that in the end, teams are advocating for what might make sense for them. I do think there's a greater sense in the NBA right now that in the end, almost everyone's not going to like some part of this. There'll be some who don't like a lot of it, but I don't sense that there will be such pushback as to this. And this is like when you're trying to get together the Players Association, the commissioner's office, and the owners. Now, I know the owners and commissioner should be one, but the owners are, there's 30 different owners, and they don't all see it the same way. But I think that in the end, almost all of these constituencies are going to allow Adam Silver in the league office to make the case for what he thinks is best. And remember, Silver's having continuous conversations with the players. He knows, especially the stars, he has known for quite some time what their preferences are. He'll talk to them directly because he knows he needs to be able, he's got to be able to sell it to those guys so they can sell it to their peers and then sell it to the public.
Let's talk about two of those parties that seem to be pulling in opposite directions, and I'd love to hear how you think that could be resolved. It's easy. It's between good teams and bad teams. That's two very different interests. Whereas it seems like bad teams and players on bad teams don't see the incentive in coming back and playing out worthless games, and the risk reward's not there for them to do so. Well, I guess, by the way, if you want to get them invested and give them a reason to play, maybe a wider tournament format, then you got the good teams that go, well, why should we be playing against teams that didn't earn it out throughout the regular season, right? So the good teams are like, we shouldn't have those guys in anyway. Maybe that's an easy one, Woj. Okay, just carve out the bad teams. They don't want to play, and the good teams don't want to play them. Is that actually an easy one to resolve?
And yes, on that level, and remember, it is not unanimous among the teams at the bottom of the lottery that they're all dying to play. There's several who would they're fine keeping their lottery odds right now, not coming back, especially when it's only a few games. there's some like Atlanta, Travis Schlenk, I talked to him for the piece, and you know, Atlanta, like they made a Clint Capela trade, but haven't been able to get him on the court yet. What worries some of the teams who are the bottom end lottery teams is they're essentially going to go 8 or 9 months without playing meaningful basketball from March until the start of next season, December. That worries them. That's part of the consideration. But here's what, in the end, probably keeps 30 from happening, Will, is just for health and safety, like you have a better chance in a controlled environment if you have less people. And so it isn't just the team you're bringing, but you're bringing support staff and all of those others who come with the team. By keeping several of those teams out, you're keeping hundreds of people out of that environment, and you can feel, at least potentially, theoretically, like you can control it a little better. And so I think in the end, that just makes that's fewer tests they have to do, that's fewer potential people to either contract or spread the virus if they come in contact with it. And that, in the end, is probably as compelling a reason as any to keep this smaller than the 30 teams in the league.
Adrian Wojnarowski, senior NBA insider here on the Will Cain Show. Would that same rationale then, Woj, apply to some of the ideas you wrote about it? We've talked about it, like the pool play or the group play, like the World Cup and the Olympics. That would expand it beyond 16 teams, right? That would bring in some of those, what would they be, 9, 10,
yes,
11 type standings teams in the East and the West. But by doing that, you're doing exactly what you just described. Not the full 30, but you're expanding the number of tests, the number of people involved. Mm-hmm. Do you think that could end up killing that idea?
No, I don't, Will. And I think there's a balance there. There's a balance from 30, especially when there's only a few games left to play. But I think there's a case to be made in fairness. Like, look at the Western Conference beyond the eighth seed. You got three teams at 3.5 games out. And Memphis, they've got the toughest stretch of their season. They had their toughest stretch left. I think it's difficult. I think they might have been number one in strength of schedule in toughness. And then you have New Orleans and Portland, who had much easier schedules left. Now, you're not going to play all those games out. We're not going to get to that because there's not enough time to play all those games out. But it does allow you to make a legitimate case that those teams were close enough. They're in the hunt. And they deserve a chance to go and compete to get in the playoffs. And, oh, by the way, Zion is there at number 9 with the Pelicans. And that's certainly, let's be honest, like having Zion having a chance to get in the postseason certainly has value. A Portland team with Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, and maybe they get a couple of their bigs back. Hey, so there's reasons to include, or you might want to include those guys. And I think that's the most likely scenario, Will, is 16-plus. 16 plus. Now, whether that's we have 20 teams or 24 teams, I don't think it's going to just be, I think it's unlikely it's 30, and I think it's unlikely that it's just 16. I think there's something in between that brings teams back, lets them have some games that essentially be treated as play-in games or pool play, and that might be the middle ground where there's enough. The teams you're bringing back feel like they have a chance to get in the playoffs, and it's reason enough for them to go through a month of training camp and quarantine to come back and try to make a run at it.
Hey, you wrote about some of the good teams feeling like they shouldn't be penalized. If you did the group stage or the pool play, then you could run the risk that a team like the Lakers or the Clippers, who played well all season, didn't emerge from their own group, right, and therefore didn't make the tournament. So if that's a concern between those two ideas, like a play-in tournament for those final seeds or the whole group stage idea, would you think they're leaning one way or another?
I wouldn't say leaning, Will, but I think that in Europe, the pool play is very clear to people how it works. They're used to seeing it. People have a less of a exposure to it here. And I think just understanding it and having it be simple enough to, I don't want to say simple enough to follow, but like there's more explaining that has to be done there. The play-in tournament is something that the league has been pushing for a couple of years. They wanted this to be voted in for next season. Now, it could come a year early by necessity because of the shutdown. And so that fits in with a model the league would like to continue with, regardless if none of this had happened. They saw that as a way to kind of spice up the regular season, create some more revenue with television based on having that play in at the end of the season for the seventh and eighth seeds. And so I think those are ideas that have perhaps the most traction, but they're still pouring through all this. And as much as the sense that I've gotten and Zach Lowe, and we were reporting on this, that there is not as much of an appetite overall for the 30 teams, I won't sit here and tell you on Tuesday that it absolutely positively can't happen. I just think it's something between 16 and 30 for now feels like that's going to be the sweet spot of them of a return of the league.
Real quick, Woj, before we hop off here, I know everything's in the brainstorming phase, but if they do that play-in tournament, what is the conversation? Is it a one-and-done tournament, a three-game series? How would they do that?
Well, the play-in tournament that they had projected moving forward would be essentially you would have to win twice or lose twice to be knocked out. You'd have to win twice to get in the playoffs. You'd have to lose twice to fall out. They don't want to make it too easy to get in and too easy to fall out. And so that's but they're toying with different scenarios in this playoff incarnation. And it's going to depend on how many
team.
Right. And is it going to be a 7 to 12, 10, or is it going to be 7 to 12? Are you going to bring back 24? Are you going to bring back 20? So it's dependent on how many teams they would include in it.
Got it. ESPN senior NBA insider and the host of the Woj Pod, Adrian Wojnarowski, here on the Will Cain Show. Okay, Woj, we'll see how it unfolds this week. Thank you, man.
Thanks. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Okay, take care. FPI has its predictions out for this next NFL season. I'm going to give you mine. Who do I think will win second, third, and fourth as well, the NFC North? Coming up on the Will Cain Show.
Will Cain.
Hey, Will, man, I just want to commend you, man, for everything that you do, man, what you stand for, man. You keep it 100, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm a brother from another mother, but I like what you're doing.
Stay right here. More to come from the Will Cain Show.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
FPI predicts the Green Bay Packers will miss the NFL playoffs. What are my predictions for the NFC North? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show, brought to you by Barbasol Shaving Cream. Choose Barbasol Shaving Cream for a thick lather and close, comfortable shave. Close shave, America. Close shave, Barbasol. It's settled. Bubba got last in our spy movies debate, our nomination, our draft of spy movies with MacGruber. That means Bubba will be drafting first next week. But what category will we be drafting first in? Well, we're going to find out in the final hour of the Will Cain Show when we figure out who drafted the best spy movie. And I have a suspicion it's not going to need a caller vote to break the tie.
You might be surprised.
I don't know. I think I won't be surprised. What would you did? Why, Mike? You feeling pretty confident about Red Sparrow all of a sudden?
I didn't say that. I just
who are you talking about? Breach.
It's not going to go as you think.
Really?
MacGruber might make a late push.
I guess theoretically. And we could theoretically have a worst and a
We're
first.
We're still
for
waiting
the same
for
movie.
That first. I mean, U571 almost did it, but.
Almost won worst and best?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it, but you all hated it, but. Yeah, we're still waiting for that first movie to be worst and first. And,
all right, we'll find out if that MacGruber, happened this week.
MacGrubes could be the one. Go for Grubes.
Seriously,
it's not
going to
be
that.
Red Sparrow that does it.
It's not. That's all coming a little later here on the Will Cain Show. All right, the FPI predicts that your following teams are going to be NFL playoff teams in the NFC. The 49ers, Saints, Cowboys, and Vikings are your division winners. And the Seahawks, Bucks, and Eagles grab your three wild card spots in 2020. In the AFC, it's the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Patriots, and the Colts as your division winners, with the Bills, the Steelers, and the Titans as your wild card teams. What's that mean? Well, everyone's noted the Packers who went 13-3 last season, are out of the playoffs. A little bit earlier here on the Will Cain Show, Tim Hasselbeck said that's insane for the Packers to be ranked 15th. It might be, but I don't have them winning the NFC North either. This is how I suspect the NFC North will break down. At number four, as much as I want to see improvement and think that they could be much better, I have the Detroit Lions. They played without Matthew Stafford for a time last season, and Matthew Stafford was having one of the best seasons of his career. But I can't just plug Matthew Stafford back into a three-win team and assume they're going to make a massive leap. Not when at number three, the Chicago Bears went 8-8. And I think that we can all agree that Nick Foles at quarterback is an upgrade over Mitchell Trubisky. That team, as we had stated all season long, was a quarterback away. Now, I don't believe Nick Foles is that quarterback to make Chicago a playoff team, but I do believe he's better than Mitchell Trubisky, and that keeps them ahead of the Detroit Lions for now. If the Detroit Lions with Matthew Stafford are going to make that leap, we're going to have to see some incredible work by Matt Patricia. He's going to have to start earning that job very, very soon. At number two in the NFC North, I have the Green Bay Packers. I do expect a regression. I think more so than many of our analysts who think it's a crime that the Packers all of a sudden are missing out on the playoffs. I am worried that everything that has gone on this offseason for the Packers is not going to serve to motivate Aaron Rodgers, into one of his best seasons, but it's causing division. It's sowing division between Rodgers and his head coach, Matt LaFleur, division that we all suspected. How could this work? A first-time NFL head coach, a quarterback who has a history of questioning his coach, who often freelances. He had a productive season, only four interceptions inside that Matt LaFleur offense, but then they turn around and they draft Jordan Love in the first round, essentially putting Rodgers on the clock in Green Bay. I think it's disharmony, not competitive fire, that comes out of that relationship in Green Bay. And at number one is the Minnesota Vikings. I do believe the Vikings are a good team and one that has consistently been doubted. Kirk Cousins is good enough. He's not one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. He plays in a very friendly offense, heavy play action, a team that has invested in its running game, its offensive line, and has invested heavily this offseason through the draft in its defense. I think the Vikings are very good. I don't know about Super Bowl contending team, but one of the better teams in the NFC. And I certainly pick the Vikings as number one in the NFC North. All right, some breaking news here. Nuno, you have it up on my screen. The NHL has announced its plans for the 2020 season. So I'm going to read through your notes, Nuno. Tell me if I'm getting some of this wrong. Okay, Gary Bettman, commissioner of the NHL, has said the top 12 in each conference by points percentage will advance to the playoffs. The regular season is, in quotation marks, complete. So the top 12 in each conference will go into a playoff-style tournament. They will go to 12 teams in each hub city. Hub cities are not – how many hub cities is it, Nuno? Is it two hub cities?
They're going to do two – they're looking at two, each per each one per each conference.
Okay.
And Chicago, Columbus, Dallas are some of the candidates for to become a hub city.
All right, here's a list of the potential hub cities. Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Edmonton, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Toronto, and Vancouver are candidates to be hub cities per Gary Bettman. Each team will be limited to 50 personnel in each hub city. So you have 12 teams, each conference, 50 people for each of those 12 teams waiting to see where those hub cities will be located. And formal training camps can start no earlier than July 1st. So how long will those training camps be? And what is that playoff format going to be? I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about Reggie Bush's comments on whether or not paying some college athletes could destroy those students, and figure out the exact details on what this tournament for the NBA, the NHL playoffs will be. That's coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
The NHL has announced its plans to come back in 2020. It's announced its format, and we have the details for you here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio. Reggie Bush also spoke out on what could happen if college players start getting paid. It's not all a rosy picture, and for that, Reggie Bush is receiving some criticism. That's coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But here are the details. 12 teams in each conference in the NHL will make the playoffs. The top four seeds in each conference will advance. They'd get a bye in the playoffs as seeds 5 through 12 play each other to advance to the second round of the playoffs. Those top four seeds will play a round robin in the meantime with each other to determine final seedings. By the way, these seedings, 1 through 4 and 5 through 12, is based on points percentage. It's not just points in the standings right now, but it's based upon points percentage for the number of games they've played. Is that right, Nuno? Because Dallas, for example, the Dallas Stars are 5th in points, but I believe 4th in points percentage. Is that how it works?
Yeah, correct. So like City 2 for the Western Conference, St. Louis, Colorado, Vegas, and Dallas would be the top four seeds, and they would play in a round robin in City 1 for the Eastern. Boston, Tampa Bay, Washington, and Philly would be the top four seeds in the East.
And points percentage is a way to even this out for teams that didn't play the same number of games for the regular season up to that point, right?
Correct, and this is actually the easy stuff that they're doing because now Bettman is discussing the way they're doing the draft, and that I'm not even trying. Like, I don't even want to try to explain it.
Oh, really? He's
because they're draft doing like
right
different
now?
Phases and breaking it down by points percentage and different things of that nature. So the seven teams that didn't make the playoffs are automatically in that draft lottery, and then the teams that don't make the playoffs will be put in there, but their percentages will be different. So it's kind of it's a little confusing, and I don't want to get killed by the hockey guy.
Hockey guy's long gone, I would imagine. So essentially, the NHL is going straight to the playoffs. They're skipping any kind of completed regular season. They're going straight to the playoffs, but they're expanding their playoff pool to 12 teams, and they are assigning seeding based upon point percentage. What's interesting about that is the NBA is going to have to address a similar issue. If they are going to scrap the rest of the regular season, as some of the teams at the bottom of the standings would like to do, no point in playing out a season they see has no real upside, only risk involved in it. Plus, by the way, they like their current lottery status. Then you're going to have to even it for the number of games played so far. And that will also affect draft status for the NBA. We hadn't even thought about that yet. How do you establish draft order with an incomplete season? So this is a model. And by the way, I will bet you this is something similar to what the NBA ends up with for their playoff format. We just talked to ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski, and he said it will be 16 plus. So it will be the teams you would expect to make the playoffs plus the couple teams perhaps in the 9-10s, current seeding, maybe all the way down to 12, bring them in for a play-in style tournament. The only difference that we're hearing from the NHL is what they're going to do is they're going to expand that play-in style tournament all the way up to the 5th seed, giving only the top 4 the ability to advance into the next round of the playoffs. It's a pretty interesting format, I think, that the NHL is embracing here. I don't know that anybody's going to care about that round robin for the top 4 seeds determining seeding order. I don't know if it's going to be enough stake in the game to really make those games interesting. But that 5 through 12 tournament for the first round is going to be very, very fun to watch. We'll see if the NBA follows suit later this week. Reggie Bush of Fox Sports gave an interview to Playboy.com, and he was talking about some of the potential issues that come up with paying players. Now, I think what Reggie Bush had to say was not only non-controversial, but I think he was absolutely right. He said that they're about to start paying college athletes. This is something that has never been experienced before, and it's going to destroy some people if their foundation is not in the right place. He went on, the one thing I wish I had early in my career is proper financial knowledge. I hired good agents and I hired a good team, but I allowed that good team to make decisions for me. I'm not saying I'm going bankrupt, but if I had the proper knowledge back then, some things would be different. People just assume, well, you got all this money, so you're good. It's actually the opposite. He goes on to essentially lay out a rationale that more money, more problems. And Reggie Bush isn't wrong about that. But some people don't want to hear that from Reggie Bush. Here's Paul Feinbaum on Get Up this morning.
But in college athletics, I mean, there are many filters. And I don't mean to shoot the messenger here, Reggie Bush, when he has a good message. But you can't forget that he disgraced his school. He had a Heisman taken away from him. And frankly, I'd rather go to Tom Brady for a golf lesson than I would for Reggie Bush for advice on what to do in college, because I just think he's trying to cover up all the mistakes that he's made without really taking responsibility. And I think that's the key.
Jaylen alluded
to it. You have to take responsibility when you're a young person. You just can't blame it all on someone else.
I totally disagree with Paul Feinbaum. The fact that Reggie Bush was punished and caught for taking money while he's in college doesn't undercut his ability to give this advice. It actually, in my mind, bolsters it, because he's somebody that we know on the record got paid during college. We know he had money during college from being a college athlete. So therefore, he's in a pretty good position to advise on what that's like when you get money at the age of 18 or 19, having not had it before. And his message is 100% true. If you, all of a sudden, with no background, no youth, no history of dealing with finances like this, all of a sudden have money dumped into your lap, do you make good choices or do you make bad choices? Some will make good choices. It's true. And some will make bad choices. And all Reggie Bush is trying to do is say, we need to figure out a way to give them knowledge at that point in the game. Otherwise, this is just be flushing stuff down the toilet. Now, that's not an argument against paying college athletes. That's not what it is. And I think when a lot of people crush Reggie Bush, they're doing it because they assume he's saying that. And by the way, he got mad because ESPN's headline said something like, paying college athletes will destroy some lives. And the implication there is that he's against paying college athletes. He's not. He's not saying that. And I think he has a little bit of a legitimate gripe. Like, that's not the context in which I said that. It's not arguing against paying college athletes to make this point. It's actually being very realist and helpful to make that point. And I don't care if Reggie Bush seems like a hypocrite in making it. I actually think it helps bolster his resume to give those advice, to give that advice, not undercut him. Even if he doesn't understand how news works, because he told ESPN, don't run the story, I didn't give you permission. It's not how that works, Reggie. What could we learn from the match yesterday? The biggest golfers and the biggest quarterbacks in the game. Next.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.